is it possible to refuse an inheritance? I think that we kind of got to that answer, and the answer is essentially yes, right? So when a person learns that they will be receiving some manner of inheritance from the estate of a loved one who recently passed, chances are they have they'll feel like mixed emotions, probably some mixed emotions of being certainly grateful, I'm sure. But on the one hand, they're still, you know, mourning the recent loss of their friend or family member and unconcerned with material things at that point. While on the other hand, they may be excited about this prospect of receiving some money and or property. And while this is perfectly, you know, understandable about mixed emotions at this point of inheritance, it is important for people that are in this scenario to know that they might feel another emotion, and that is conflict. Indeed, it might be honored that their loved one was so kind enough to leave them this gift, whatever it might be. But sometimes people really may feel that they're better off without it. So essentially, yes, and Jasmine shortly is going to be going over laws that are applicable to your ability to refuse an inheritance. So who ultimately can disclaim an inheritance? Well, under Massachusetts law, it has to be an adult individual, so it has to be at least 18 years of age, right? And in some, it has to be, can be anybody from fiduciaries, including guardians, conservators, personal representatives may disclaim property on behalf of a deceased beneficiary or a beneficiary that might be under a legal disability. The probate court, which appoints the fiduciary, must approve the disclaimer as being in the best interest of those that are interested in the estate of the beneficiary. And that's going to also be something that Jasmine goes over a little bit as well, or the estate of the beneficiary. And they also have to find that it's not detrimental to the best interest of the beneficiary or the estate of such beneficiary. That other individuals who could also disclaim can be someone like a trustee, an executor, family members. So it's pretty kind of varied, the options for those that can participate in disclaiming property. So what assets can be disclaimed? Almost anything and everything, from if you're receiving some sort of income under a trust from a power of appointment to certain bequests that you may receive under a will. We talked about a little bit about property. If you're a joint tenant, that is, if you have rights of survivorship to a property that both of you have 100% to the whole, or you have a 50% interest. Some examples that I had right here on the slide are like jewelry, paintings, but things much more than that can be cars. Those are all assets that you could possibly disclaim. And it doesn't have to be the whole inheritance. It also can be a portion as well. We talked a little bit about survivorship interest. So again, that's things that are jointly held assets. Typically, those are things that are property sometimes, but not always just property. That can be things that are bank accounts as well. We also have bank accounts that are jointly owned. And once that person passes, what happens? All that money in the account goes 100% to you. So depending upon what's going on with your situation, you may not want those funds. I know some of you guys may be saying, why wouldn't I want those funds? Again, it depends on the person's situation. It also goes to beneficiary interest. So if you are a beneficiary to an account policy, like a retirement policy or insurance policy, it also extends to things of that nature as well. So if you decide to disclaim an inheritance, do you get to decide how it should be divided? So the person who decides to disclaim an inheritance has no say in what happens to it. So indeed, it will be distributed to the terms of the will, if there is a will, okay? And if there is a will involved, typically, a good state planning attorney will make sure that there's a backup beneficiary. They typically call it like an alternate beneficiary, or contingent beneficiary. It's also anonymous, so your backup beneficiary usually will go that way. So that's an example of how it will go per the terms of a will. Or if the person died intestate, meaning without a will, it will go to the next person in line. So let's say you were one of the children that was supposed to receive an interest. Let's say it was, $50,000, and it was supposed to be split between three children and you were one of the three and you decided to disclaim it, it's going to go to the remaining two. So it's as if you never was living at all. So once you choose to disclaim, it's important to know it's irrevocable. That's it. And you can't dictate how or who should ultimately get it. Okay. That's important to know. So who receives disclaimed interest? I pretty much just answered that. So it depends upon how the estate is set up. Again, if it's by will, it goes by the terms of the will. If it's by intestate, it goes by the intestacy statute. If they have a surviving spouse and you're the spouse who decides to not elect to it and you have children, it will go down to the children, etc. Some just general rules before I pass it over to Jasmine, who's going to go into the laws that govern disclaimers. One general rule that governs the qualified disclaimers is what they call Section 2518 of the Internal Revenue Code. So that's Section 2518 of the Internal Revenue Code. So essentially that sets forth requirements that must be met for a disclaimer to be treated as a qualified disclaimer for federal gift tax purposes. And essentially a qualified disclaimer is a part of the U.S. tax code that allows assets to pass to a beneficiary without being subject to income tax, okay? Because again, that's one of the main reasons why people disclaim is to, you know, be able to avoid income taxation and all those good things. So legally, the disclaimer portrays the transfer of assets as if the intended beneficiary never actually received them. So at this time, I'm going to go ahead and pass it over to Jasmine, who is going to go ahead and cover a little bit more of the laws and the steps that it takes to disclaim.
Thank you, Nicole. So we talked a little bit about the Internal Revenue Service and what requirements have to be in place. So when you're thinking about a disclaimer and you're talking with your client and you're deciding that it's the right option in place, what actually does one have to do in order to disclaim an inheritance? So there are different levels, both at the federal level and the state level, in terms of steps that need to be taken. So I will be speaking first to what has to be done pursuant to the Internal Revenue Service code. Nicole, next slide, please. So first, the disclaimer has to be in writing, and we'll talk about the specific requirements pursuant to that in a little bit, but it does need to be in writing. You do need to make sure that you deliver the disclaimer to the executor or the trustee, and that has to be done within 9 months of the person's passing. So when it comes to certain types of interest, the 9 months time frame is a little bit different. So relative to interests that are taken pursuant to joint survivorship, it would be 9 months from the time the decedent passed away. The other types of interest would be 9 months from the time that the interest is ascertained. In the event you're dealing with a minor, it would be 9 months from the time that the minor turns 21 years old. The person that's filing the disclaimer, you have to keep in mind that they can neither have accepted nor benefited from the assets that they're seeking to disclaim from in any way. So if someone, for example, takes actions that are commensurate with them accepting the benefit, then in that event, they're unfortunately unable to disclaim. Next slide, please. So pursuant to Section 2518, a disclaimer has to be considered a qualified disclaimer in order for it to be valid. So I know that I discussed that it has to be in writing. So specifically, what does that mean? So you have to make sure that your writing is dated. It has to have a proper identification for the property that you're seeking to disclaim. You have to make sure that it is signed and notarized by the disclaimant or the disclaimant's legal representative. And then you have to make sure that it complies with state law. So we'll also be speaking to Massachusetts and specifically what's required in Massachusetts. And that's both to the form as well as the content of the writing specifically. Next slide. So the disclaimer has to be timely. So again, within the 9 month period that we discussed, and a noteworthy practice consideration is that the 9 month period is very strict. So when you're dealing with disclaiming issues, you really want to make sure that you're mindful of that 9 months, because it is very strictly enforced. And again, the person disclaiming has to neither have accepted or nor benefited in any way from the benefits that they're seeking to disclaim. And as a result of the disclaimer, just keep in mind that the interest will pass to someone other than the person disclaiming it. And at that point, that person has no say whatsoever in terms of what happens to those assets. So the legal authority, in addition to Section 2518 of the Internal Revenue Code, I'm going to be speaking to what's required in Massachusetts, which is Mass General Law, Chapter 190B, Section 2. So in Massachusetts, in some, pretty much what's required is it's similar to the Internal Revenue Code 2518, where essentially it has to be in writing, it has to be within the 9 months, it has to be delivered to the executor of the or the trustee. The person cannot have accepted the benefits in any way nor benefited from them. But in addition to all of that, you do need to file the disclaimer with the probate court. And when real property is involved, it does have to be recorded. So now I'm going to be getting into some uses for a disclaimer. I know early on in the presentation, Nicole touched upon what are some situations that would make an inheritance undesirable, if you will. In practice, oftentimes there are a lot of ways that disclaimers are used to benefit clients. And one of those is to reduce the marital deduction to ensure the use of the applicable exclusion amount. So what I mean by that is, let's say, for example, a surviving spouse inherits property, then that surviving spouse may want to disclaim part of the inheritance so as to not exceed the marital deduction. But there are some considerations for that to consider: generation skipping, transfer tax concerns, which we don't have time, unfortunately, to touch upon today. But just keep in mind that it can be used to reduce the marital deduction. Another way, and again, I'm just going to be highlighting a few of these, is to enable a qualified plan or IRA benefits payable to a non-spouse beneficiary to pass to the spouse. So meaning, let's say, for example, there's a qualified plan or an IRA benefit and the beneficiary is listed as a non-spouse, that non-spouse can disclaim the interest, so the interest then will pass to the spouse and qualify for a rollover. So a rollover meaning whatever asset that the spouse had, the decedent spouse had, will then roll over to the spouse. Another way that it's utilized is to shift property otherwise passing to a member of an older generation to a member of a younger generation without gift tax liability. So we see that a lot in an example where, let's say there's a transfer from a parent to a child. In that situation, if the child wants to give a gift to their child, but without incurring gift tax, then one option may be for that child to disclaim, and then for their child to take the assets. But again, just being sure that whatever mechanism you're dealing with, so whether it's a will or a trust, that that's what would happen by effect of the will or the trust, because what you don't want to happen is if you presume that it would go to the child, but maybe there's an alternate beneficiary or someone else in place that would take if the child does disclaim. So just be careful about your use of some of these disclaimers. Next slide, please, Nicole. Another option is basically to accelerate a trust interest. So again, if there's a remainder interest in a trust, then by disclaiming, you know, a life beneficiary interest, for example, that would accelerate the commencement of the remainder interest. Nicole touched upon this to avoid exposure to potential creditors. That's a way to utilize it. But again, there's been a lot of litigation surrounding federal bankruptcy law. So that's one area to be careful about. So let's say, for example, your client wants to disclaim their interest, they disclaim their interest, and then they file for bankruptcy. There has been litigation surrounding whether or not that's considered a fraudulent transfer. So you just need to be mindful about those kinds of issues that could come up in your practice. Another area is to preserve the right to receive governmental benefits. So for example, Social Security, Medicaid. So for some of those programs, you only qualify if your income is at a certain threshold. And once it exceeds that threshold, you're no longer qualified. So for example, if you're to receive an inheritance that would impact that in any way, some people may take the option of